better listen very carefully.
A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready.
Essentially, at this point, the fight is over.
So you pretty much flow with the goal.
Who is worthy to be trusted with the secret to limitless power?
I'm ready.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Bulletproof for BJJ podcast. I'm JT, and I'm here with the ever magnificent Joey.
What's up, you guys? How you living?
Happy New Year. Tell you what.
Happy New Year. Shit.
Yeah, we're here. 2023. It's a good thing. Lots of good things coming this year. But man, we're just doing a bit of reflection on some crazy BJJ stories.
Yeah, sort of comes to mind at those random little moments where you're like, oh, that's right. There's that time I went to that gym and it was fucking wild, yeah. You know, for one reason or another. And you're like, damn, that was I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, it flashes you back.
Yeah. And, you know, like training in different gyms, traveling overseas and visiting other gyms is like some of the coolest experiences you'll have with your jiu-jitsu.
For sure. I definitely encourage everyone out there. I think for two things, it broadens your understanding of how jiu-jitsu is in the world,
yeah.
But then it also makes you appreciate like your own home gym and everything yeah. else that you have at home. So,
and it's cool. Like, I mean, it's a really nice way to also get to know a new place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you go travel somewhere and you're like, oh, I'm going to go and visit a gym.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're meeting people who live there. Depending where you are, but there's usually some expats, there's some locals. It's, you know, rather than just maybe having a touristy experience or you and your accommodation and wherever you know, go to have dinner and shit. It's like you actually get an insight into like the lives of some of the people there.
Yeah. It's much closer to a more authentic cultural experience because they're like, yo, we don't go that spot. We go over here and here's why. And you're like, oh, wow. And I think people pay a lot of money to try and artificially do that.
Yeah.
But jiu-jitsu being the community it is, even if you don't speak the language, if you've got a gi and you go there and you roll and even if you totally get your ass kicked, just by being there and training, you're part of the crew.
Yeah.
And that's cool. So even if it's not like, you know, you only train there once or twice, I have found so much insight and richer experience from having gone to a new place and done jiu-jitsu. But some crazy stuff can happen.
Let me tell you something crazy that happened to me when I was in Bali.
Please.
So Bali, for a bit of context, is like a real Australian hotspot. For tourism, it's I don't know, what is it, like 4 hours north?
It's very close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's part of Indonesia. It's an island of Indonesia. It's amazing. I think Australians have been going there for a long time. It's become really developed and very like really a bit over popular for Australians and whatnot. In like a lot of tourists, like happens with touristy towns,
sure,
or you know, parts of the world. But in any case, it's still beautiful and it's common that, you know, people will do like a wedding there or, you know, whatever it is. So I had a buddy who was getting married there.
Amazing.
And I'd actually never been. I've always been a bit contrary to like I never wanted to go to the places where Aussies go.
Everyone goes.
Yeah. But so anyway, I'm going to Bali for this wedding, right?
You became one of those people.
And I guess I was a frothy blue belt at the time.
Sure.
And, you know, it was a group of friends. We had this big villa that we booked, we're all there, you know, a big group of us for the wedding and stuff was going to be nice. Super sick. And obviously there's a bunch of partying going on, people are drinking, having a great time, that whole piece. And I think we were there, I think it was maybe a 10-day trip, something like that.
Nice.
And we're a couple of days in and the wedding wasn't for a couple of days yet. And I want to go train.
Yeah.
You know, it's a classic thing, right, where you like really enjoying like being out of your normal routine and being away and stuff. But yeah. You're eating a bit of shit. You're drinking too much.
Yeah.
You actually want to go and like get a sweat on and do some training.
Yeah, have a roll. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I think I've been doing a bit of like some push-ups and fucking squats and shit at the villa that we were at. But I was like, I'm going to go check out what's going on in the jits scene. Now, at the time, funny to think back, internet wasn't as easy to access as it is now.
Yeah.
In terms of, yeah, I think I had a smartphone, but it wasn't connected to the internet all the time.
No.
And I'm in this villa and I'm like, fuck, I'm looking for a place. When we first arrived in Bali, we went to like the busy part of town. I think it's called Kuta. We went to Kuta and we checked into a hotel, like a big kind of big sort of hotel resort sort of thing. We stayed one or two nights there while we found our feet before we got to the villa. In the foyer, I meet this big, tall Dutch guy, and he's like, hey, man, are you a fighter? And I was like, oh, like I do a bit of jiu-jitsu, yeah. And he's like, oh, that's great. And he was a kickboxing guy who also did a bit of jiu-jitsu.
Dutch love the kickboxing.
He was an older dude, big, tall, brown, classic Dutchman.
Yeah.
You know, wearing a singlet, little shorts, like just been sunbaking for about 6 weeks straight. But he said, there's a great gym. There's a great gym down the way. You got to go check it out. I think it was called Shark Jiu-Jitsu or Shark Fight Academy or something. And I was like, okay, cool. Where's that? And he's like, you know, because it wasn't like, just pump it into Google Maps. He was like, you go down the main road and then you take a left and then you do this thing. And I was like, all right, cool. I think I got that. And so anyway, a couple of days later, we're at the villa, we're all having a good time, and I'm like, fuck, I've been feeling a bit sloppy, so I'm going to go train jit. So I jump on my scooter, and I ride out to this joint, and I've, you know, just got my bag, got some water. I guess I had a gi. And funnily enough, I was staying about 30, 40 minutes from Kuta.
Oh, okay.
So a little ways out. And I remember driving past Half Gracie Academy.
Oh, straight up.
All the time on the way there. But it was always closed. So I'd drive past that and I'd be like, oh, fuck. You know, looking out. Hopefully there's a class on. I can connect with someone.
Sure.
It's closed. So anyway, kept going. And I get into Kuta and I find this place. And, whatever. I remember it wasn't too difficult to find, but it was already a little bit of an adventure to get there. And go up and it's in this kind of big concrete sort of building with multiple levels, and I could see it was like a big sign at the front, Shark Fight Team or whatever the fuck. And go up some stairs and run into a guy, and he's like, oh, you're here for the class? Yeah. He's like, yeah, it's upstairs. And anyway, get in there, nice big gym,
cool,
big open space. They got like a cage at the back.
Okay. Yeah,
proper cage,
MMA cage. Yeah.
Yep. And it was I can't remember the fella's name. He was an American coach. Get this wrong. Is it Mark Lehman? Mark Lehman black belt?
Not sure.
I think he was a guy like from those early kind of wrestling sort of jiu-jitsu MMA days. Okay. Anyways, he was a lovely dude. He was like, hey man, like what's your deal? Where are you from? I said, oh, I'm just here for a week. You know, I'm from Australia. You know, I'm like a blue belt. And he's like, man, jump on in, you know. And it was a pretty big class. There's a good mix of people there. There's, you know, a couple of American dudes, a couple Aussies, and a few local like Indonesian guys.
Right.
We had a sick class. It was the first time I learned – what's the takedown? You see it in UFC all the time. You never see it in jiu-jitsu, or not that often, where you've got like an underhook and then you just tap the back of the knee.
Knee tap.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, we're working that.
And it was super effective.
Yeah, and it was the first time I was like, fuck, this seems so easy.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're drilling the shit out of that. And then we did some rolling and whatever, and that was fun, you know. And it was like classic thing when you're in a tropical area. It's hot as fuck.
Oh,
you're sweating like a motherfucker. It was no gi, by the way. So we're just, you know, shorts and a rashi. Anyways, it was a mad session, and we finished, and coach was like, hey, man, that was awesome. You want to stick around? He said, we got a couple guys fighting MMA. We're just doing a bit of specific prep for them. You interested in jumping in?
Oh, what?
I was chuffed. I was like, what a compliment.
Oh, he likes me.
I'm like, well, of course, I'd love to.
I've got the skills to pay the bills.
Yeah, part of me is like, oh, he obviously thinks that I'm like high caliber and wants, you know.
Good guys.
And
good
so,
blue belts to beat the fuck out
right?
of them.
Yeah, I'm basically a black belt by this stage, right? And so so it was me and a few other guys from the class. I'm like, oh, you see right here? Cool, we're all sticking around. And I think, I don't know, maybe three or four of the Indonesian dudes that are in the class. Now, they're all smaller than me, these dudes. So I was like, whatever, great.
Should be fine.
And I'm pretty sure he just took us straight over to the cage and he said, all right, guys, so let's put some gloves on. So we all put on gloves. Now we put on 4-ounce MMA gloves.
Oh, danger.
And I'm like, this is sick. I've never put these on before. I'm like, I'm throwing bones right now, you know? Dude. And he goes, all right, we're going to Shark Tank. He goes, these two guys have got fights coming up in like a month. He said, so we're just going to Shark Tank them. We're going to do like 90 seconds or 2 minutes each. And then, you know, you come out and you guy goes in. And I was like, all right, fucking cool. And
so what was the nationality of it? Were they Indo guys?
They were Indo guys.
It wasn't like this is young Khabib.
Like, there's a Russian guy that's training in. No, they were like Indonesian dudes.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And like I said, I had a distinct size advantage.
Yes.
And he said, all right, so what we're going to do is we're just going to line up and, yep, cool, first guy goes in, all right, yep, first partner, off you go. What he was doing was basically just barking sort of orders at whoever came in. So first couple guys went and I don't remember paying too much attention, and then I came in and he's like, he's talking to me and he's like, fucking, like, submit him. Like, I want you to submit him.
Right.
And so I'm just there and I don't know if we slapped hands or whatever. I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, whoa, like, I've never been in a cage before and I got 4-ounce gloves on. And then the guy punches me in the face and then I'm just like, oh, it's on. And I'm just start swinging at this little Indonesian dude. Fuck, I remember like cracking him in the head and just being like, this is the sickest. Like, fucking bang, bang. And it, like,
Joey, I was, the Hammer Worthington.
I'm like, bro, I'm just thinking about all the Tank Abbott clips that I've watched. And, you know, I got clipped. The guy hit me, and I remember it occurring to me that I'm like, holy shit, like, we're fighting right
this
now.
This is real.
Like, this is on. And I was able to close the distance and take his back.
Yeah.
And every time I took the back, I could finish them.
Right.
You know, they just didn't have jiu-jitsu to the degree that I did.
Yeah.
On the feet, they were picking me apart, but I could close the distance, take the back. I kept going to the armbar from the back.
Sure.
You know, we go Kimura grip and then
switch it,
throw the leg over. It was one of those times where, you know, we trained for about an hour. Whoa. And I probably did like 4 or 5 of these rounds.
Wow.
And I was getting cracked in the head and I was cracking dudes in the head and doing some, and it was so much fun.
Wild.
It never occurred to me that it was highly irresponsible.
So dangerous.
So fucking dangerous, right? I think if I didn't have the 20 kilo weight advantage and I...
just being a complete savage.
The guys that I was training against were being nice.
Sure.
Like, they weren't putting it on me. Like, they could have kicked the shit out of me if they wanted to, no doubt. I think we were throwing, there was no head kicks or no hard leg kicks or anything like that.
Yeah.
It was mostly just hands and a bit of grappling. But looking back, I'm like, I had a great time and I thought I was a killer. Dudes could have just fucking wrecked me if they decided they needed to.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
No mouth guard.
What?
No mouth guard.
What?
Right? Like, I wasn't, you know, just, oh, I put the gloves on, 4-ounce gloves. Dude. Like, you're just asking yourself for...
it's a bare knuckle fight, basically.
It is, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever, wrapped up the session, high fives. So we finished the session and he's like, oh, yeah, so these guys got a fight coming up in a month. It's like, this guy here is like he's the number 2 MMA fighter in Indonesia currently.
Wow.
This guy here is one of the top prospects this year. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cool. And then as I was like riding home on a massive high, because I just, you know...
Semi-concussed.
I'd basically just won the Indonesian championships of MMA.
Pretty much.
I'm like, I was fresh meat for those guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like, coach was just like, hey, can I use your body to help my guys get better? And I was like, fuck, it didn't even occur to me at the time. I was stoked because I thought by him asking me it was a compliment. Yeah. But actually, he just, hey, I need some punching bags. You seem pretty robust.
Yeah.
Mind jumping in with my boy?
Seemed like you could eat a punch. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's tough. I mean, you know, I trained for MMA. I fought MMA. And, like, when you get punched in the head with a 4-ounce glove, it's basically, like, it's not there to protect you in any way. It's there to just stop the person's hand from disintegrating, really.
Yeah.
And just keep it all tight.
Yeah.
And, man, you can get cut. Like, that's the thing, depending on the glove. But, man, that's wild that you could just walk in and he goes, hey, you want to jump in with our champs?
I know.
That's loose.
Isn't it?
God.
I imagine it still happens in a lot of places though, huh?
Maybe it does.
Especially where you don't have a lot of choice of training partners.
Possibly. But I guess that speaks to your gung-ho approach to life. And maybe where you're at that time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, whereas now, if someone was like, you just went and trained somewhere and you're a black belt, they're like, yeah, but you're a black belt. Jump in, they're white belts, but they're kickboxing champions.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, yeah. Yeah, just thigh kicks, not knee kicks. Like, yeah, it'll be fine. Great story. I can't believe you haven't said that one before.
I'd actually forgotten about it.
Wow, there you
and
go.
The funniest thing is then, like, you get back to the villa and everyone's like, how was your jiu-jitsu class? And then you're like, oh, yeah, it was sick. And you've, like, just had this wild experience. You can't even articulate it to people.
No.
I mean, I think for jiu-jitsu players like all of us, you can't even articulate what a really full-on jiu-jitsu session is like, where you had some hardcore rolls and you're like, man, it was amazing, unbelievable, dangerous, reckless. Brutal. Can't wait to do it again.
Yeah.
Can't exciting. Believe I didn't break something.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, like, you can't articulate to people. So it's just funny coming back to the villa and everyone's like, you know, they probably thought I was just doing some karate shit or whatever. You know what I mean?
Taibo.
Yeah. Like, man. I won the fucking Indo Championships, bruh.
I'm the champ. Give me my black Bingtao singlet now.
The other part of that is,
please.
Is there's all these motherfuckers when you go to Bali who have scooter accidents. Because
oh.
they're drunk and they're riding their scooters around.
God.
And they're in hospital and they don't have insurance and it's that whole thing. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what would happen if I got my teeth knocked out or if I got my shoulder dislocated? I'm like, I would have been one of those fucks, just no insurance, stuck in a pretty dingy hospital.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a real bad day.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, like, to travel insurance. It's good to have it, but also just check that too, because you're going to have to claim it back later.
Yeah, they're probably not covering you for cage fighting.
If you can find that insurance, let us know.
Gentlemen, y'all strive for gold in your life, right? Gold medals, gold watches, gold everything. However, there is a certain type of man who goes the extra mile. He walks with confidence of a lion and he giggles in the face of danger. He's a big, hairless winning machine. And when he unzips his pants, he sees platinum. That's right. Manscaped would like to announce that their biggest and best ultimate hygiene bundle, the Platinum Package 4.0, is now available worldwide. You too can have this same level of hygiene. You can get 20% off and free shipping when you use the code Grizzly at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. It's time you enjoyed the finer things in life. Get yourself a Platinum Package for your Platinum Package.
Speaking of cage fighting, I had my first time to Brazil. 2009, I'm training at Gordo Jiu-Jitsu. So for those of you out there who don't know who Gordo is credited with pioneering the half guard.
Wow, okay.
He badly hurt his leg and couldn't play guard the way he wanted to, so he put his good leg in and worked it like that. And so Gordo's gym is set up at, I think now technically it might be Evolve. That's Evolve MMA, but it's in Barra de Tijuca, the little river town, which is back from Baja a bit. And I went there through Rio Connection, which was Dennis Aish, which is no longer, like, Dennis moved back to...
What was Rio Connection?
Rio Connection was basically, are you a gringo? Would you like to come to Rio and do jiu-jitsu? We've got this accommodation. Like,
wow.
Stay with us. You're literally 50 minutes walk from Gordo Jiu-Jitsu.
Like a facilitated jiu-jitsu trip.
Yeah. And they would take us for trips and go up to stuff and... I actually got to be in, like, a little documentary, and we went up to the Tijuquina favela, and there's this guy called Edu Panchu, who's a kickboxing legend, who runs this kickboxing class for kids, and they just have bandages. They don't have gloves or wraps, and that's it.
Wow.
And they don't even have pads. They just punch each other.
Sound like the kids that I might have fought those guys in Indonesia when I did that death match that time.
But, man, I went up there. Like, I had a great connection, Rio. It's... You know, this is so many years, 15 years ago, but it was awesome for me because it allowed me to access real top-level Brazilians and then also just hang out with other try-hard gringos.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was mad, but, man, I didn't know what was up. I had no idea what was up. And at this time, I'll name the person, but so there was this pretty hard-looking dude just hanging out by the side of the mat and I was like, who's that guy? And, like, everyone there was hot. There were so many good guys.
What belt were you at this stage?
I was a white belt. I'm a fresh white belt.
Holy shit.
I'd only been training for 1 year.
Right.
So in my first year of jiu-jitsu, I decided I'm going to go to Rio.
Yeah.
I'm going to train in Rio. Like, why would I do that? I was training for the Rio Open. And, man, we got pretty slaughtered, you know. They put us with some white belts, but sometimes they just be like, yeah, go with a black belt. There's this really grim-looking dude on the sideline always talking with Gordo. And he had... His right arm in a cast because he busted his knuckles in a kickboxing fight. That's what people said. And he also had a knee brace just because of a knee injury. And he was just there all week and we were there for a month. And, man, this guy was just like the hardest looking dude. And then one point he came to class in a gi and he had a black belt, had a couple stripes on that sucker. It was really worn. And he still had the cast under the gi and the knee brace over the gi.
Right.
And they put him with me. And this guy bashed me. Like, my guard was okay, not the best, but I wasn't the easiest guy to pass. And if I kind of got past, I'd scramble like a madman to try and get back to my guard. And he was just like, I don't know if you remember the fight between Matt Hughes and
Hoyce
Gracie. He does the down elbow where he put the palm on your face and just drop the elbow.
He with the cast.
Yeah. He was down elbowing me in the head.
He was just trying to post. He was just framing. Sorry, my friend.
He just kept
my
slipping. Friend. Yeah. And he's hit me in the face with this cast, and then he's knee riding me with the knee brace.
Oh, wow.
Bro, it was one of the most brutal experiences. Like
fighting RoboCop.
Basically. And it just, and it was a 10-minute round. Like, I just got so brutally beaten. And I came off the mat and I said to Big Mick, who was there with me, I was like, who the fuck's that guy? He's like, that's Rafael Dos Anjos. He's a big prospect. He might be in the UFC soon. This is before
you're fighting RDA.
RDA bashed white belt. The fuck out of me as a white belt with a cast, which is like a weapon, and his knee raise. Oh, my God. One of the most brutal beatings of my life.
Holy shit.
Dude. And it wasn't until later that I actually saw him in the UFC just leg kicking the fuck out of Nate Diaz. I was like, I know that guy. Oh, my God. He did that to me in a gi. And I actually, it was funny because it really hardened me that trip. I didn't realize how brutal jiu-jitsu could be. And I actually won the Rio Open as a white belt.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Dude, how cool is that?
That was crazy, yeah. Just going to the Tijuca Tennis Club where I'd seen all the VHS tapes of Ted Adair and Hodger Gracie. And
yep.
Being there was like 2009, yeah, 2010. Yeah, I started in 2008, this was in 2009. Man, it was...
But you know, I competed there maybe a year or two later.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know. How is that?
Yeah, in the Rio Open.
Yeah, Matt, Rio Open's the spot. Yeah. Yep. So Peter DeBean, who was my coach at the time, said that is the biggest comp outside of Worlds. It's even bigger than the Brasileiro.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And wow. So being around that madness, it hardened me and I was able to come through and yeah, I pretty much won every match via armbar.
Just holy shit.
Pull close guard, sweep. From the sweep, come up, armbar, or just armbar from guard.
Mad.
But then in the final, I fought this like 16-year-old skinny kid. You know, I'm like 26, jacked, fucking just pure athleticism, but like minimal skill. And this kid pulled guard on me. I was like, wait, how do I pass guard? I don't, he just pulled my move on me. What do I do?
I haven't been to that class yet.
I don't know how to pass guard. So I was just fighting not to get swept. And then I think he just eventually got tired and I kind of just forced my way out and he kind of broke. So I passed his guard and I just armbarred him.
Sick.
Bro, it was amazing. It was a great experience, but holy shit. So worst beatings of my life.
Did you do something to piss RDA off?
I tried to keep my guard.
You reckon that's what you had? Yeah, like you had like audacity, looked at him funny in class.
A gringo or white belt.
Yeah.
Trying to pretend I got jiu-jitsu in front of this guy. It's like a three-stripe black belt. It's his gym.
Yeah.
Everyone gives him whatever he wants. And maybe he's just a mean fuck. Like, he didn't give a shit. He's just like, fuck this guy. I'm fucking him up. Because he felt like it. Like, you know, what could I do other than take it, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it's, I just remember, I just at the time, I was like, why is this guy so mean? And then when you see him in the cage in the UFC, you're like, that's why he's so mean. Like, that's,
bro,
that's an appropriate place for him.
Peak RDA was a fucking brutal force.
Right.
When he leg fought, was it Anthony Pettis?
Yeah.
Where he just dominated. He was like a fucking Energizer bunny.
Boom.
Yeah, he was so powerful, so fast.
So hard.
And like for the full, I don't know if it went five rounds, but the full length of the fight, he was just dominant. And Pettis is similar kind of guy.
Amazing fighter.
And he was just on the back foot the whole time.
Dude, I and that's the funny thing. You don't know who you're going to bump into with like traveling and training.
Yeah.
And you never know. You might be rolling Paulo Miau as a little skinny blue belt. You don't know. And then
I told you I rolled one of the right. Miaus, right?
Yeah, yeah, you just didn't know.
That was fucked.
Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You just come in like, oh, you know, I know jiu-jitsu. And you're like, fuck, no, you don't.
You're like, I won a local tournament.
Yeah.
I won the Sydney Cup, bitch.
Yeah, but a blue belt.
Yeah.
But that's the tough thing. It's great, but it's also a bit frightening because I also had one of my teeth like kind of knocked out.
Wow.
Not by RDA, but by just some other English dude. First round, first drill, guard passing, need me in the face, knock my tooth out. You know, these things happen. So
yeah.
I think for me, it's cool. You get a cool story to tell, but at the time it's kind of traumatic.
Yeah, well, I mean, kind of to the point about my story too earlier, like it can really go either way.
Oh.
It can become a great story and an awesome experience, or it can become a traumatic experience and still a great story.
Yeah.
But yeah, like whether you perceive it as like it can go bad, and anytime you got that much kind of, you know, two people going for it, you know, just the context of jits, it's fucking chaotic.
Yeah, it can be. But I mean, it's
a fire worth throwing yourself into if you don't mind if you're happy to take the risk of whatever, getting a bit busted up or getting a bit emotionally damaged. You know, if you don't want that, don't go
do that.
It. Yeah. But you know, I think for us, like reliving it, you're like, yeah, I'm so stoked I did that.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely, like I said, it definitely made me more passionate about jiu-jitsu, because that's the thing I got from being at the Tijuca Tennis Club, is the screaming and the
people carry on.
Screaming and like people wanting to jump the barrier and attack the ref, and you're like, whoa, people really care about this thing.
I remember watching there, like, because I was, I'm a chill competitor, so I'm in that place and I'm like, man, these people need to relax. And
it's just jiu-jitsu.
After like I remember seeing this kind of juvenile like division fight, and it was this kid, and the kid was like, I don't know, like maybe he wasn't juvenile, but like beginner. Yeah. Yeah, young, and he was there with his mum and dad and like his older sister, and they're watching him. And this kid, like, the kid was doing good, like won a couple matches. Every time he won, he'd run off the mat, rip his gi open. Yeah, like go to the family and they'd be like, and then he was like blowing his nose out off the edge of the mat and like stomping, and you're like, bro. Like, you're 12.
Yeah.
Relax.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was just like, holy shit. Like, you could just see, like, the passion, but also how he was, like, emulating the all big this. Stars of the game.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, the intensity's on another level here.
It is. And I think, you know, Australians, we say we're laid back. Maybe not always. But, yeah, when you see that passion, I connected with that. It made me just love jiu-jitsu and want to keep that. So I think that's the great thing about these experiences. It just gets you deeper connected.
We got a voicemail.
We do.
We got a voicemail from our man Joel.
Shout out.
Let's check it out.
I'd like to share a bit of a cautionary tale and get some advice if possible. I was always considered quite flexible, so much so that Brazilians nickname me Lumbriga, tapeworm. Now when I look back, what I used to consider flexibility was essentially joint laxity and a bit of pojada. Now understanding what was happening, and every time I was submitted with, say, a Kimura or an Americana because it felt uncomfortable or hurt, it was actually tearing the labrum. And I've just received a surgery for a grade 4 slap tear of my shoulder. Which meant they have to cut off my bicep and reattach it to the bone, which is terrible. And the surgeon was kind of shocked that I wasn't some sort of pitcher or a cricketer or something, because of the extent of the damage in the joint. I'm considering doing some basically really focused bodybuilding after I recover from this to build up some stiffness and a bit of muscle around my joints so I can protect them, so I can continue to live a decent life. I love the podcast. Thanks a lot, guys. Keep up the great work.
Big props to Joel.
Yeah, Joel, our guy.
Met Joel a long time ago. Been in touch ever since. Haven't seen him in person for a long time. Mm. I think we met at a CrossFit coaches course.
Oh, right. Nice.
Yeah, but man, thanks for the message. Sorry to hear about the injury. That's right, fucked.
It's brutal.
But what an interesting thing, right? He's talking about having a surplus of flexibility has enabled him to just, it's meant that he's copped damage, more accumulative damage to his shoulder over time, which has resulted in him needing a pretty full-on surgery to fix.
Yeah, and shoulders are so complicated. I think that's the thing people don't understand. For our bendy brethren out there, if you're eating submissions because you're like, oh, I can get away with this, in the moment it seems like you can.
Doesn't come for free.
No, it doesn't, because that strain and stress, which maybe isn't happening at the tight muscles, is now happening at the connective tissues, which is what Joel was talking about.
Yeah.
And yet, from what I understand, speaking with people smarter than me, physios, exercise physiologists, the shoulder is so complicated in terms of it's just your arm bone hanging there, and just all tendons, ligaments and muscles around it. It's not a true joint. So when you have shoulder surgery, very hard to come back. And I think to speak to Joel, when he had actually messaged me and said, hey, dude, I don't know, I think I might quit jiu-jitsu. Like, I don't know. I needed my shoulder to work. You know, I think the idea of doing some bodybuilding to build the muscle around the joint, very sensible. Like, just really reinforce that sucker. That's the next thing you got to do to make sure it keeps its structural integrity, it doesn't sublax or dislocate. I don't think it means you have to quit jiu-jitsu, but I think it might mean it's going to be a bit of a break.
Yeah, I mean, that's a real personal part, isn't it? Whether you want to continue on with the game. Did you say he's a brown belt?
He's just newly brown belt last year.
Okay, yeah, so similar to me, right? Like, yeah. Not like just in terms of getting injured at brown belt and being like, fuck, do I want to keep up with this?
Mm.
And whatever, that's something you got to figure out for yourself. Of course, when you're just off the back of the surgery and stuff, I would say you're probably at your lowest point around then. So things will get better, both physically and mentally. To give people an understanding there, most of the population, and generally men, will struggle with being too tight. And so your body won't be able to get into certain positions because the joint will be restricted by the muscles around it. Now, for those sorts of people, we want to stretch and increase range of motion so that you can move that joint more. But there's this other end of the spectrum for people who naturally have, not excessive, but they have like...
more range.
Yeah, they've got more range. Their joint that has no lack of flexibility. It can go there. But some of those people lack the stability in the joint, which is the muscles and the neurological ability to stabilize control. That joint when it gets to that end range.
Mm.
Now, if you're coming from the tighter end of the spectrum, you're kind of naturally always, as you're opening range up, you tend to be naturally building that strength and neurological capacity.
As you go.
But if you're just naturally flexible, you don't have the strength necessarily. And if you do end up relying on it, whether it's intentional or not, like in Joel's case, he's like, I don't think he ever really thought about it.
No.
From the sounds of it, it can cost you because your tissues are taking this damage. So it's something to be really mindful of. And it's just, you might find that you are one, you might be both of those people. You might be Joel in the shoulders, but then you might be the tight guy in the hips or vice versa.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the case that it's full body. And so it's just something to be aware of because, I mean, it's a great cautionary tale. I'm really glad he shared that. Mm. Yeah, if you can avoid a surgery, right, if you can be like, fuck, maybe I shouldn't let my arm go to that position every time. Right. Maybe I should try and fight out a bit harder and tap earlier.
Tap earlier, yeah. I mean, my knees are actually pretty flexible in extension, maybe a little bit too flexible. So I can I can eat a knee bar a bit longer than most people, but I shouldn't because I know that even if I fight really hard, I can kind of wiggle and get my way out. Forcing my knee to that point, there will be a degree of swelling later. I won't be able to squat properly for a couple of days. And I tell myself I got away with it, but really not. I'm investing in future knee surgeries. You know what I mean? Like, even though in my head I'm like, yeah, got out of that knee bar. Yeah, didn't get out of the knee reco when I'm 50.
Yeah.
Or knee replacement. Here's the thing, guys. Like, even though we've come very far in technology, when it comes to joint replacements, those suckers don't last long. You don't want to be getting those unless you've only got 10 years left on the clock, because that's really where it's at with those things. So whether you're a tight person or, in this case, you're really flexible, it's good to just be like, man, I'm stuck in this submission. Even though I could eat it for 5-10 seconds longer, should I? Like, maybe just, okay. You got me.
You could tap, or you could say to your partner something like, hey, have you heard the latest Bulletproof of BJJ podcast?
Oh, what? Yeah, actually.
Right? Yeah. And then it's, you know, great conversation. Nice segue into you're out of the submission now.
Yep.
You know, they get some extra information for their jiu-jitsu journey.
Sure, start giving them feedback about how they could do the submission better, like coach them.
Yeah. Hey, because apparently I heard they got an app. We should check that out.
Definitely. I know it would help you get stronger with this submission because it's not working right now.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
So there's options. You just got to play the game right. Thank you for the voicemail, Joel. Wish you all the best with recovery. If you want to leave us a voicemail and get featured on the show, go to our website, bulletproofforbjj.com, and you can leave it there. And if you do, our app is on the App Store. Get on it, start training. It's free. If you need anything from us, get in touch. See you next week.
Thanks, guys.